Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
It's Wednesday, which means it's Trends Day on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, a collaboration between USA Football and First Down Playbook. And joining me is the founder of First Down Playbook and former NFL coach, Charlie Quinn. Charlie, this has been a fun series here throughout the year, and it's great to be talking some ball again as we get into the late season.
Yeah, Keith, great to be here. This weekend was certainly exciting. A lot of good stuff going on, and a lot of strange stuff going on, but we'll talk about it here in a second.
And also joining us is Zach Dunn, our content coordinator and an analyst himself. Zach, as always, good to be talking ball with you as well.
Can't wait, Keith.
Kind of a theme for this week, as we do start getting into some inclement weather, some rain, potentially some snow down the road. We don't see mud that much anymore because everybody is playing on field turf now, although we did see some pretty poor field conditions in the LSU game. But, you know, rain, wind, those kinds of things becoming a factor, which means it's a good time for some power football. Run the football and be physical. And we saw a little bit of that this weekend. One play in particular, which we want to point out, is a very interesting one. It was from Kansas State. And Kansas State, most of those guys came over from North Dakota State, who is really known for running the power. Really good power running team, traditional power with the fullback kicking out or exchanging that responsibility with the tight end. And we saw a really unique play where everything started out looking like power. The only difference was the guard, who was skip pulling to his right, stuck his foot in the ground and came back left, and I believe blocked a safety or a nickel player who had to come back in the box and fit, and a tailback kind of just a little bit of a cutback there. Reminded me of the windback play we're talking about from the 49ers versus the Browns a few weeks back. But another variation of that, running a counter without necessarily running counter blocking.
Yeah, Keith, when you described it and you saw it first and I went and looked at it, I was like, what's he talking about? And I looked at it, I started laughing. I'm going, it's the epitome of using the coaches and the players against themselves. Because, you know, once again, and you featured North Dakota State on the USA Football blogs and podcasts, and power this, power that. And you know daggone well those Oklahoma defensive coaches were going, stop the power, stop the power. You know, they're going to out-tough you. They're going to try to be tough guys, come in here, run the power in the strong side A-gap all day and stay on the field. And sure enough, if you look, that play was run early, and the thing that they did had a tremendous gain on the play. I don't know, I think it was 20 or 30 yards. But probably more important than that, for the rest of that day, that linebacker that came across that formation because the guard halfway skip pulled and came back to the play side, he's thinking, wait a minute, coach, this is not what we worked on all week. And now there's a little bit of doubt. So whether they were running the quarterback power or the two-back power or whatever power they were running, for the rest of that day, that doubt was in the defense's mind.
Guys, keeping along with the theme of running the football, we've talked about the wham play here a little bit and the way that teams are using it, again, to separate the defense. You know, I think of wham as a great tool to be able to slow down some of those interior linemen a little bit. And what Oregon did this week against Washington State, kind of a new variation of it. A lot of times you see that wham player let go. And in this particular case, and I don't know if it was by design, it kind of looked like it was. But, you know, he was engaged, and then he has that tight end off the ball coming across, running right into him. It really opened up a nice running lane. And again, like I said, it separated the defense. So you have everybody stretching the one way, and essentially you're creating that cutback really right there. You know, again, the gaps move, but essentially over where the guard would be.
Yeah, and Keith, as you the commonality of really, whether it's the WAM or the power, the thing that I saw this week, and I saw the play you're talking about, I think that that play was unique because it's, you know, a lot of times the WAM player, it's a big, it's a physical play and all this, but the as I looked at that play, it's almost as if they took the defensive lineman into the or away from the WAM and made the block easier, let's put it that way. But just looking at, you know, we're talking about power fake, we're talking about WAM. And one of the things that jumped out at me this week was just how good football teams, particularly in late October and early November, are the teams that are going to be willing and able to run the football. I mean, you're looking at that game there. You look at the game we just talked about with Kansas State, where they dominated that football game and kept that explosive offense from Oklahoma off the field. You look at the LSU football game, to where two tremendous, you know, easily top 10 teams and maybe top seven, top five teams when you get down to it. I mean, Auburn has got a tremendous team. And at the end of the game, LSU imposed their will and ran the football. And we focused on one RPO type play where they made it look like it was an RPO. But really, if you watch that game, and it's times it can be, you know, in 2019 football, fans can think that's a boring thing. You know, this thing is not 52-48 or something like that. But what you watch there were two very good football teams, and at the end of the game, LSU finally imposed their will in the run game on Auburn, and to me, that was the difference. And that's what we're about to see here, I think, in November and December.
Yeah, Keith, I'll go ahead and add to that. Remember when the Kansas State guys were hired the Kansas State guys were hired this past offseason, one of my first points made on Twitter was, you know, I wonder if hiring a guy like Les Miles and hiring the North Dakota State staff to Kansas State, I wonder what this will do to the Big 12, because the Big 12 is building defenses and they're recruiting defenses around defending the air raid. And the linebackers are getting smaller and smaller and defensive linemen are getting smaller. Because really, it's all about rushing the pass and it's about defending the pass. And I wondered, you know, bring somebody like North Dakota State and their staff into that conference and a team that can really run the ball and run the ball hard out of 12 personnel and 21. And, you know, can they really control the clock, control the game, keep them low scoring and, you know, hold the ball, keep the other offenses off the field. And I was wondering, you know, would that work? And I remember a lot of people, you know, were very reluctant to that, saying, no, it can't work. It's all about the air raid. I'm like, but I think we saw that. I mean, Kansas State time of possession was like almost double of what Oklahoma's was, and they ran the ball for like 300 some yards. And to me, that's the formula to beat in those schools is their linebackers are small, their safeties are small, they are designed schematically, and they recruit to defend the pass now. I was wondering, you know, that's very interesting that a team came in and said, you know what, we're going to go under center or even pistol, and we're going to run power, we're going to run zone bluff. And to me, it worked, and you'll know more about this, Keith, but what is Dearman's offense like at Kansas? Is he like an Auburn guy, or is he more air raid? Because he's put up a lot of yards the past 2 weeks.
Well, they have been throwing the ball a little bit, and, you know, typically, though, Brent Dearman's offense is really built off the RPO. I mean, they're going to run, you know, some gap schemes to do it. They're not just like an inside zone RPO team. So I guess very much like you would see from Gus Malzahn, but you know, it's all about taking some of those gift throws, you know, if they're available. And I haven't seen a ton. I haven't been able to see full game cut-ups of it yet. I've watched extended highlights and some condensed game where not all the plays are in there, but you know, they've done a good job of mixing things up, but I did see a quote post game that I think it was actually from the quarterback that said, you know, only about 25% of Coach Dearman's offense is in. So interesting that maybe they didn't necessarily make a ton of schematic changes yet, but there's just something different going on there. And you even see, you know, I was texting with with Brent on Sunday, and you know, I made the point to him. I said, "Your schemes are great, but I'm watching, you know, the highlights. I'm listening to post game interviews, and there's something about what's going on with, you know, the culture, the attitude of the players, and just, you know, I think a jolt of energy that Brent's been able to bring to that offense that has translated here the last 2 weeks. And really, I mean, that's, if you've talked to Brent, you know, that's what he's known for. I mean, an incredible football mind, but, you know, don't forget about the culture side of things too. And I think, you know, as we go through and we talk about all these trends, that's certainly an important part of this too, is the culture behind these programs. And I think, you know, Brent Dierman stays on track with what he's doing. He's going to have an incredible run here, not just at Kansas, but I think in his career. I think that guy has a high trajectory.
No doubt. And what I can't remember who just said it, but if you're Texas Tech, what 25% is in? You're the defensive coordinator. You don't know what 25%. So they had to prepare for the 100%, and they had to scramble and go get all of the tape. They probably were listening to Keith Grabowski on podcast and watching what Charlie Coyner drew up in the off season. Anything you can get your hands on to learn about this guy, because you don't expect that to happen. I guess you do these days. But I want to go back just for a second, because I think Zach made an interesting point about a North Dakota State to Kansas State kind of thing in that conference, because this has been a little bit of the 800-pound gorilla in the spread offense room for a long time now. There's always one Saturday that seems to be that it keeps them out of that game they want to be in, or those final games they want to be in. And so, you know, if you bring a Kansas State, where you bring physical football into that, and I think, you know, I know Les Miles is going to have a degree of physicality in his offense, regardless of who the offensive coordinator is. But I think what you run into there is, okay, you're going to start changing the culture of that division to where one loss ruins everything for a lot of people, and the Big 12 conference doesn't necessarily like that. But yeah, that's what happened on Saturday, and it was physical football, it was control the clock, and it was also, and I am a big fan of spread offense, but at the same time, live and die by the sword. I mean, if that, you have that day come up and you're going to be a, you know, and you're going to roll the dice right before halftime and throw the ball across your body and throw a pick, you know, I know it hit the Oklahoma guy's hand, and then also go down right before half and take a sack that could have knocked you out of field goal range. The field goal kicker bailed him out of it, but it's just a style of play. If you're going to live by it, and they live by it very successfully, 10 to 11 games a year. If that one you die on, you just got to be, I guess you got to be ready to take that. But I think the North Dakota States are going to start, excuse me, I'm still calling North Dakota State, the Kansas States, and that style of offense will change some things in that conference.
One more thing to that is, I know that when Texas A&M came to the SEC, they brought Johnny Manziel and they brought the air raid. You know, they gave Bama a lot of problems the first years, because Bama was built to stop LSU's power run game, built to stop Auburn and Gus's offense. They're built to stop Georgia and that run game. But then a passing team came in the conference and gave them a ton of fits, because they recruited and they built their teams to have really big linebackers and very slow linebackers. And I remember after Ohio State beat them in 2014, Saban and Smart went back to the drawing board, and they kind of rethought, you know, hey, like, when we face these spread teams now, you know, we're not facing LSU, you know, we need to get more speed on the field. You know, we need to rethink how we're designing our offense. And I think that's what the Big 12 is going to run into is, hey, we're not facing the same offense every single week. You know, we're not facing the same air raid offense. We're going to have a little bit of air raid, but then we're going to have the Kansas State sprinkled in there. That's, you know, very power run game. And I think that makes it even harder on defense, because you can't recruit and you can't scheme to, you know, what you're going to see for 10 weeks. It's almost like coaching high school football. You might see the air raid 1 week, but then the next week you're going to see the single wing. So, I mean, I think it makes it very tough on defensive coaches, and even how you recruit is, you know, you can't recruit just to defend one offense anymore. There's going to be multiple offenses, and, you know, one week you're going to face Oklahoma State, and they're going to be 10 personnel and empty the whole game. But then next week you're going to face Kansas State, and they're 21, and they're, you know, high formation and, you know, power. And, I mean, that's very tough, and I'm very interested to see what defenses do, because I think more teams in the Big 12 won't necessarily go to what Kansas State's doing, but I think they will sprinkle in more heavier sets, almost like Oklahoma has done the past 2 years, but they've been very heavy 12 personnel and rain the heck out of counter.
And I'll take the old-timers' view on this, since I'm the oldest guy in this conversation, and say that's absolutely what makes the game great. I mean, it cycles, and you're right. Nick Saban looked at that, and, you know, playing Manziel and spread and all that. But you know what else he did? He went out and got him Hurts and Tua. He went and opened his offense up a little bit too. So the beauty of our game is that, yeah, you got to get ready every Saturday. And if you think it's all going to be the same thing every week, then you need to go, I don't know, you need to go coach another sport, because it's not going to be that. That's what makes football great.
You know, it's interesting as we sit here and talk about this style of play that, you know, can change a conference. You know, when I go out and watch high school games, I've seen more and more where you used to see like diverse number of systems that everybody is living in the 10-11 world and 11 personnel with the tight end off the ball, and a lot of the similar concepts being utilized. You know, just thinking of that if you're moving into a conference and you're new somewhere, that strategically, tactically, you know, that might be something you want to think about. Is there something you can do? And I'm not saying you have to throw out anything you've ever done, but to change what you're doing a little bit to give you a strategic advantage, whether you're in a running conference and you come in and run spread, which was, you know, the trend years ago, and, you know, coaches would come in, I'm going to spread things out, we're going to change things up. Well, now it's, you know, the pendulum swinging back the other way when you see that, you know, teams are not built to defend power football teams. You know, think of this, Charlie, like, when you would go and install, you know, from the defensive side of the ball, the first thing you would install against was the I formation, the pro set I formation. Now you're gonna go install against the spread. And I mean, I could think of it even coaching at the college level. You know, we focused a particular game plan on running a lot of, we were in the pistol, but running a lot of 21 personnel within there against a team that was 4-2-5. And all game long, I was waiting for them to bring the extra backer into the box, and they honestly did not have that adjustment within their playbook. And, it, you know, it was the first year for that staff, but, you know, I don't know why they didn't progress to that, but they never put that extra backer in the box, and we were at an advantage all game long.
Keith, one thing I'll add is, me and you had this conversation a few weeks ago, was, you know, your scheme is almost based on your conference or your schedule. You know, you're going to run whatever scheme that's going to fit, that fits to play to whatever style offense or defense you're going to see for, you know, 8 weeks of the year. You're not going to design an offense to beat somebody that you might play in the playoffs, or a defense that you might play in the playoffs. You're going to design your scheme based on what you're going to see 7 or 8 times, or what you think you're going to see. So, you know, like, it would make no sense for a team to go install a 4-2-5 nickel defense when 8 of their 10 games are going to be against, you know, wing T football teams. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And to me, that's where I think that a lot of the time your scheme comes from what you're going to see. So, for instance, Alabama, you know, they were stuck in that big, you know, three four world where, you know, hey, we're going to recruit big linebackers and huge nose tackles because we're going to see LSU running the eye. We're going to see Auburn running their spread wing T. You know, we're going to see Georgia running the heck of the ball with Rick. And, you know, kind of like how what the Big 12 is going through right now, you know, they had a team come in and really challenge them with Texas A&M. And, I kind of think it's fun to watch conferences and to watch teams change their scheme because, you know, hey, this is that. Now we have to play this every year, and now this is giving us a ton of problems.
Well, getting back to some of our trends. One that we've talked about several times, we started looking at this one last year, but we saw it again from the 49ers this week. Bunch set with the tight end on her center, and they start with, I believe it was their outside receiver in the bunch, coming in jet motion with, you know, we've called it a trailer, with that guy coming right behind. And, you know, he ended up kicking out. It could have been the power scheme. It looked like a long trap. Regardless, though, they had it blocked up and they're creating space. You know, again, you're making people defend the field differently. We always think about 53 and a third being spread offenses. But, you know, this is a tight bunch with a tight end, and yet the defense is spread out in gaps and still having to defend the edge. And I know we love that play. We've talked about it a few times here on the podcast, but we saw it again from the 49ers, who are, I think, the epitome of a really good running team that utilizes play action to make them deadly.
Yeah, Keith, I went and watched that game yesterday, and Richard Sherman didn't call me and get mad at me because I wasn't really on a San Francisco bandwagon at the end of the year. But, you know, you win 6-7 games. I knew the quarterbacks were good. I knew they're putting a good deal together there. But that's a good football team. And I watched that whole game, saw that play, and that's the epitome of – they split the defense wide open. They, you know, they had like a speed option going to the left, and they had jet sweep going to the right. And guess what? Handed it underneath, kind of one of our 5v5 NFL flag, USA football flag football plays is what it was, underneath handoff and went to the house. And so, yeah, we've been seeing a lot of that. And they, at San Francisco, if you've got NFL pass or whatever, if you got a chance to watch that game, are doing an incredible job of the misdirection and using all 53 and a third of the field. And the other thing that jumped out with that crew is that they've got about 50 screens in the playbook, and they caught about 15 of them on Sunday. And really smart coaching to slow down the pass rush, to make sure that quarterback is playing all 16 games, and that kind of deal. So I was really impressed when I watched what they were doing on Sunday, and I hadn't watched a lot of them. I'm on the East Coast and on the West Coast, but that is certainly a football team that's going to have to be reckoned with for the rest of the year. And that defensive end's pretty good too, that they got playing for them, named Bosa.
A little bit different, getting away from that power run game. We did see this in the LSU game. We talked about it last week on All 22, and I have an article coming out this week on just an alternative short yardage strategy, being the receiver screen. We've seen it from the Patriots. We've seen it from the Rams. A number of teams have done it. We've seen it now at the college level. And LSU tried it the other day it started potentially in a quad set, and they moved out of the quads and left the receiver there, and it was not successful. I do mention in the article what I feel are some key points if you do want to run that play. And I think the biggest thing, Zach, you and I talked about this, that I think caused problems with the play is they didn't motion from the outside in. I think that motion is a key part of the play, just to get some of the bumps that you'll get on the coverage as the personnel start to move pre-snap. I think sitting there in that static trips bunch set really allowed that guy to come off the edge. Just like you would, you know, we talk about that play being like, you know, a dive play inside the box. You know, if you leave a guy unblocked with a short edge, he's going to skin right off that edge and make the tackle in the backfield. And that's essentially what happened to LSU.
Yeah, Keith, you know, that whole short motion into the bunch really sort of makes the play, because when you motion him into the bunch, the guy covering him has to start to get depth and has to start to bubble over in case the guy goes all the way across the formation. And also, just because of pick plays, you know, he don't want to get caught up in the rub there. He wants to make sure he's off, and, you know, they're playing different levels there. So, you know, when you motion down into that tight bunch, you pretty much get a 2-on-2 with the blockers, and the guy can catch the ball with momentum going forward and can kind of fall into the end zone. It's just the small details with the play like that, and also with with running the play towards your quarterback's strength, you know. So if it's a right-handed quarterback, you want to throw or you want to run this play to the left so he's opening up and throwing to his left and he don't have to flip his hips. Whereas to the Saints last week, they were in the same play and scored on it, but Bridgewater had to open up, flip his hips, and throw it to the right. And also that they motioned from across the formation, which, you know, I'm sure they had their reasons for that. But to me, you know, when the quarterback has to take the snap and he has to flip his hips, that adds probably roughly a half second. You know, that's the difference between that play scoring and that play being stopped at the 1 or 2 yard line.
It does. And what I've timed it, you know, teams both doing it to the right and the left. However, I will say on that particular one, Bridgewater was perfect. I mean, his footwork on that was super quick. His accuracy was still there. And he did have it out. I said that, you know, in the article that will be up on blogs.usafootball.com, I said it has to be out in about 0.7, 0.75. And he actually got it out, I think, and I timed it. It was like a 0.75 on that one. So he was really good. Typically, I don't think that's what you want your high school or even college quarterback doing. You want to play to the strength and be able to get that out quickly. For a right-handed quarterback going to the left would be the way to go. You know, a couple weeks ago, we had a little bit, and we ran out of time, but we had some stuff to talk about with special teams. And Charlie, I think definitely after seeing some of the special teams play this past weekend, we better hit on it here a little bit, especially as we get to later in the season. I don't know what it is, if teams maybe get a little lackadaisical because, you know, typically you do run a lot of the same schemes over and over on special teams. And if it's you know, some mental laziness, maybe that sets in late season. But we saw in several games, you better be paying attention to the details on special teams or it's going to cost you.
Absolutely. You sit there and look, some of them are fundamental things and an error, a forced error here or there. But some of the things that happened this past week, and I'll just go right down the list here. You know, we got an LSU fumble to punt return that led to 7 points for Auburn. Well, I mean, that's going to happen. But, you know, but still at the same time, ball security. I mean, this time of year in a game like that, that, you know, who knows, that might not have been as close. Notre Dame blocks the punt, all right, against Michigan, and then touches it before goes back. The guy touches it when it should have been a, you know, get away from it, Peter call, all one of those kind of deals, and Michigan gets the ball back. Totally, you know, mental error. Texas Tech, I mean, we talked a lot here about Kansas, and that's great, but Kansas shouldn't have won the football game. Texas Tech, you know, does the same thing, blocks a kick or it's missed or whatever, touches the ball, kicks it around, or the kid laterals it. The player laterals it, and Kansas gets on it and gets another chance to kick and wins the game. Tennessee blocks a punt and returns a punt against USC, 14 points in a SEC game. Gardner Webb has 8 seconds left on the clock. And this is a tough one. This would be a great one to talk about sometime as far as, you know, what would be the right strategy. But they've got 8 seconds left on the clock in the game, and they're on around their own 35-yard line. And they attempt to rugby punt it, and the punter punts it right into the arms of the defensive end or whatever. He knocks it down, and Campbell University picks it up, runs it in for a touchdown, ties it up, and they go to 3 overtimes, and Gardner Webb loses the football game. So it goes on. I mean, Oklahoma, I think, fumbled a punt, and LSU missed an extra point in a game like that. So I think the lesson to be learned here, or just not learned, I mean, everybody out here understands that, but it is that time of year where your offensive coordinator wants to take a little bit more time because he's got this special play he's got to get in. And defense, you know, defense coordinator's got to cover this thing because, man, they're running this option, and if we don't do it, you know, we're not going to be ready for it. But you better make sure that third phase is not going to just crush you, because there are some coaches that did not get any sleep this Saturday night because of things that happened in the special teams game. And so that's my soapbox for this week on that one. But you said it just now, Keith. I mean, you cannot get lackadaisical in any phase of football, particularly when you're going into the month of November.
Well, it's going to be a fun last part of the season here as we head into the final weeks of high school football, a few more weeks in the regular season in college football, and then we're into bowl season, we're into playoffs and all those things. So still a lot of football left, but the games start to take on a different meaning here, and we'll see what develops as we continue our Wednesdays on our Trends Day series on USA Football. Charlie, thanks for joining us again. For those of you out there, we do draw all of these up, put some video in our show notes on blogs.usafootball.com. And Charlie has an incredible resource over at First Down Playbook. Charlie, for our listeners who haven't heard it yet, tell them what you have available for them.
You want to go to the actual play website, you go to firstdownplaybook.com, spell it out, F-I-R-S-T. If you want to go to our free blog website, every day we put something up, that's blog.firstdownplaybook.com.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.